cigarettes.
Things are good in the fast-paced world of independent podcasting. I guess time gets away from you sometimes.
It's slow-paced in a way, but it does fly by. It's amazing. How long have we been at this now?
We're coming up on, it'll be our third year pretty soon, in August, so 2.5 years.
Same here, because we started right about the same time.
That's right.
Yeah, it flew by. So, and you guys are seasoned professionals now.
Yes, of course we are.
That's being very diplomatic.
I'm still an amateur, but that's okay. I embrace my amateurism. All right, well, it's Criterion now 43. Numerically, we're actually doing pretty well, pumping out a lot of episodes. But I have some good friends, old friends, Cole and Erica from the Magic Lantern Podcast. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Guy and girl. So you were my first guest, actually, when I started this little shebang. Last year about this time, and I didn't go back and listen to it, but I think I was probably working the kinks out from this new format, so thanks for being my guinea pigs there.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
You're my favorite guinea pigs in the world. and everybody, the Magic Lantern Podcast is really unparalleled. Like, if I were to put together my list of favorite movie podcasts, you guys would pretty much, you guys would be at the top of the list.
Aaron.
Great rapport. You're it's actually kind of unique because you're a married couple, and you do have you have chemistry. You're married and you live together, and but it's really a unique chemistry that I think you bring to your cast that you really can't find elsewhere. In your Ants in the Pants episode, I just love the teasing about honorable mentions, that sort of thing. So anyway.
Yeah, be on the lookout. Eric is going to try to talk about 500 different movies today.
Yep. but they're so good. You have great taste, too. And obscure taste, too. I call your Japanese, was it erotica or something? That's
Bohachi Bushido, the erotic, grotesque subgenre that I love so much.
It's like they're speaking directly to Cole with that genre.
And Cole, of course, was on the Criterion Close-Up Gross-Out episode, which actually, Erica, I wish we'd had you on, although it was like 5 hours, so maybe it was a good thing. But I think you'd have an interesting perspective.
No, thank you.
That would be shutting your eyes and putting your fingers in your ears for that.
So anyway, what's been going on? I know you just did The Apartment, and we just had a new year, so what's up?
Well, we've just been working on the show like crazy, I'm sure, like all of us in this business. And we are planning, though, this big trip to Oslo. So we're very, very excited. That's going to be in February.
We were just looking at the schedule, and the Cinematheket there in Oslo are hosting a part of the Bergman retrospective starting just about when we get there. So we are super psyched for that.
My only hope is that they're not showing the films in Swedish with Norwegian subtitles, because I will not be able to follow it.
Your Swedish and Norwegian is not up to speed?
They're a little rusty, I would say.
Okay, maybe a phrase book might help. We'll be talking to some Bergman later. That's absolutely exciting. That's I just watched not too long ago one of the Olympics from Oslo. I think they kind of blend together after a while. But anyway, well, thank you for being my second guest, or actually first guest of 2018, but second time on the show. And we'll have to do this more often if we can. So did you have a good New Year?
We did. We had a really fun one. We had gotten together a variety of specialty cheeses, and we had a little mini celebration, or a monster celebration, I would say, probably. Yeah. It turned out to be.
I think we spent $100 on cheese. It was our party.
Wow, that is going in style.
I think I made it all the way to 11:45, maybe?
Yeah, you almost made it to the new year.
I did fall asleep at 9 and then woke back up.
Yeah, but fireworks?
No.
Okay, yeah. Only
the illegal ones lame. In our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Well, it's legal here, but I was lame and fell asleep at about 10, and fireworks woke me up, and then I finished my movie. So, but yeah, we were staying in this year. So, well, but anyway, it's the new year, and you just had your episode about your best, your favorite, I guess, new viewings or viewings of the year. And that was Ants in Your Pants of two. And I love your those episodes. I mean, I love all of them, but I love your end summaries. But and I'll put that link in the notes. But do you want to talk some favorites of last year that weren't on your list?
I had a few honorable mentions, as you refer to them. I always try to sneak in as many as I can. But from the list, I think the big highlights for me were finally getting around to Tarkovsky with Mirror.
That was great.
Yes. And then also discovering Bill Morrison, finally.
Yeah, and I've been meaning to watch Dawson, Frozen in Time. Is it Dawson City, Frozen in Time? But mm-hmm. I think Cole and actually both of you just on social media have really teased out Bill Morrison. Can't wait to check him out. But as far as Tarkovsky, I know, Cole, I believe you talked about The Sacrifice. Erica, do you have any others?
I was going to say, those were my super big, they were revelatory in terms of rediscovering those films, because I'd seen them before, but you know, they were probably mm-hmm. VHS era was the first time I encountered them. And to see them in these new restorations, they were just so luminous, especially The Sacrifice, which Sven Nykvist shot.
It's looks gorgeous.
So perfect in this new 4K. Suspiria was that way too. Seeing Suspiria in this new restoration on the big screen, it was like seeing it for the first time.
And that was after repeated and excellent film home viewings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love your part about how people in an Argento movie never just look around and say, boy, this is a great looking room.
Yeah, they never mention what awesome
they're
design.
They're oblivious to their aesthetic. So do you ever watch new movies? I know we tend to talk about old movies, but do you have any favorites from last year? Or do you just not care?
No, we definitely care. We try to go out of our way to make sure and catch as many as possible. And I think, like always with our list of favorites, there are going to be a couple that we share. And for us, the big one this year was Ex Libris, the Frederick Wiseman documentary about the New York City Public Library.
Yeah, I want to see that.
That thing, that he understands how to get inside an institution better than any other living human being. And I feel like by the time we got to the end of it, that I lived there and worked there and knew every single thing about it, and yet I still could have watched it for 40 more hours.
Is that streaming somewhere, or do you know?
No, I don't think so. I just noticed, though, that on Wiseman's site, he runs his own distribution, and he just put up a new big sale, 20% off of everything, including Ex Libris, which
fantastic.
Wasn't included in the package
cool.
before.
Okay. Well, if you want to support an independent artist, and I actually might, I'll go check that out after the new year. I think that was playing when we were in New York, and we just couldn't get, I think scheduling, we couldn't get to it this year. Any others, Cole or Erica?
Dawson City, Frozen Time is my other really big one. We're going to be doing an episode about that for my choice after next, so probably cool. My February episode of ours, we will discuss that one in great detail. Bill Morrison, I get emotional thinking about Dawson City, in fact, and just what Bill Morrison does in terms of saving and reviving mm-hmm. and finding beauty in decay and all of the great things that he does. Dawson City is probably the other thing at the top of my list.
And yeah, when I was hearing that, generally a lot of the art films that I watch, my wife is not on board. In fact, hold that thought. But she loves documentary, and she actually teaches documentary as far as literature, using that as commenting on current times. But do you think that would that's something that's engaging like a documentary, or is that still art house?
I'd say that it is pretty engaging, actually, because it's a lot of background about how explosive the material was, quite literally, and how dangerous it was mm-hmm. to be a film goer, and what life was like in Dawson City as a result of the gold boom and bust cycle. So you learn a lot about it. It's not just impressionistic the way some of his other stuff might be. There's a lot mm-hmm. of straightforward, not narration, but there's a lot of text on screen that provides a lot of historical context. So I think it's, as documentaries go, it's pretty accessible, but still beautiful and odd.
I also don't know if she is interested in what he does from the standpoint of finding things that are unfindable, that you can't see anywhere else, that would be lost to time, and seeing what they actually look like in the state, and that telling its own story.
I think she will be. It's funny. This is a podcast about recommending stuff to my wife, and she just walked down here and waved. But yeah, I read the synopsis to her, and she seemed interested. So I think I'll give it a try. But Erica, do you have any favorites of last year?
I also want to throw in Get Out.
Okay.
I think, would that be on your list as well, Cole?
Yeah, it's in my top 10 for sure.
A comedy, by the way.
Yeah, that's what they say.
According to the Golden Globes. But it's up there for us too.
And I also shared Ex Libris, but I really wanted to put Get Out in there. Not that this is a revelation to anybody, because many, many, many people loved it. But it made such a huge impression on me. I think it was an amazing work by Jordan Peele. I loved everyone in it, including the supporting cast, including and above all, possibly the supporting cast.
Yeah.
And I think it's one that's going to not diminish with time.
Yeah, it was a remarkably assured for a debut feature film, I thought. It seemed like this is the work of someone who has been doing this a much longer time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are big Key and Peele fans, and we've watched that show. Well, I think it started by the substitute teacher Aaron skit. So I get, everybody calls me Aaron everywhere I go, even at work. But even though that show was pretty accomplished, so even though it was nice to see the debut, I wasn't surprised by how confident he was as a filmmaker. And I love that it's getting accolades now, because it was kind of seen as a fun summer romp, and I thought it might get forgotten, but of course it's very relevant to modern, I guess, our culture or culture wars today. But it's not good just because of that. It's good just because it's thrilling, it's exciting, it plays with genre and tropes, and I really enjoy it. I'm glad you brought that one up.
It gives us something new and interesting to look at and talk about. And I was also really excited to read how it was inspiring other filmmakers as well, other new filmmakers and existing filmmakers to go in different directions and try new things. And so I hope that it's going to continue to inspire people.
Yeah, subvert genres. I think that's a new daring way to go. I guess that's a good segue to probably what's now currently my favorite film of last year is Mother, which subverts a few genres. And first off, this is one that my wife hated, speaking of stuff I like and my wife does not. And that was the case for a lot of people. A very divisive film. Have you seen it yet?
No.
No.
Neither one of us. I don't know why I haven't. I generally like Aronofsky. What is it that keeps you away from it?
Well, I think we talked about it a lot at the time, and I was very much on the fence. And because we do spend probably more of our time watching revival, and we are really selective with what we go see for new releases, that I think I just wanted to wait a little bit on that and let the conversation go by about it and make my own decisions.
I think that's smart. In fact, I like Aronofsky as well, and I think I knew that this was a very well-produced film, even without seeing and staying away from spoilers, which I was successful at. And I won't even mention anything even about the plot, because it's something to definitely experience fresh. But so I pre-ordered or blind-bought the Blu-ray or the 4K Blu-ray, and then because it was so divisive, I canceled it and rented it instead and watched it with my wife. And immediately turned around and bought the 4K Blu-ray, and I actually watched it twice this week.
Oh, wow, okay.
That never happens. In fact, I can't remember the last time I've seen a film and then watched it right over again. It gets accused of being ham-fisted, and I think that's actually a fair criticism. It is heavy-handed, and what he's going for is very clear, and all the symbolism, it's going to make sense. I'm not going to even tease it, but probably after first viewing you'll be like, oh wait, this is this and this is that. So there's not a lot of secrets to it, even though it's tough to explain it.
Subtlety is not a thing I think of immediately when I think of Aronofsky. He puts it right out there for you generally. So well, good. I'm glad that you liked it that much. I'm looking forward to checking it out even more now on your recommendation.
And some people that whose taste I admire, and I think whose taste you admire, have really appreciated it. Now, some people do hate it, and So you might, I would not buy it. I think it's a rental, but and just brace yourself. It's, even if you don't like it, it's certainly unique and daring. And yeah, there's the one thing I'll warn you about, Erica, is there's a little bit of gross out that did rub my wife the wrong way. So that's why I think that's a recurring theme with this. I think it's probably males tend to not be as bothered by that, and you know, it's because not putting people into gender stereotypes, but more motherhood and that sort of thing. So anyway, yeah, and I didn't see as many new films this last year as I'd like, so that I don't have a great top, so I'll just stick with Mother. I think I've mentioned before that Lady Bird was good. Do you have any best Criterions of the year, or did you buy a lot of Criterions this
Definitely.
Year?
Definitely. This year we did pretty well in terms of keeping up. I think I might have gained a little ground on our completion versus what was released, but maybe only a little. Again, we share a couple in our, say, if we had picked a top three, I think two of our top three would be the same, and those would be the Marseille trilogy and the Before trilogy are absolute essentials, I think, and I think you feel the same, probably?
I do, 100%.
I knew Marseille would make the list after hearing your episode. And I loved your description of the trilogy there. That's one of my favorites as well. And I silenced myself during the best of just because so many other people were talking about it. But phenomenal set. And what else do you have?
If I was choosing a third for my list, Black Girl would be on it. That's probably rounds out my top three.
I guess I would throw on maybe His Girl Friday.
Yes, yes. Black Girl made my list. Black Girl was just revelatory, to steal a word from you earlier, Cole. I'd seen it before, but it's one of those that that holds up and it stays relevant. I think even 40 years from now, mm-hmm. who knows where this world and country will be, hopefully where we'll be. But I think it would still speak something about culture and about history. So yeah, love that movie so much. Would you say it was a pretty good year for Criterion, or?
I would say so. I think it was, didn't they put out more titles than they've ever put out before? And I would say probably a more varied selection than I've ever seen from them in terms of the various corners of world cinema that they got into finally, mm-hmm. especially with that World Cinema Project box.
We still haven't gotten to the second set, right?
Right, we're still waiting to dig into that. And there are so many things in it that I want to see. But yeah, I think it was a great year for them.
Yeah, you'll love it. I don't know about, I haven't actually like counted titles, but I, as far as films, because of the Olympic set, I think it's that makes it, that seals it. There's definitely more, probably not a year with as many films. And yeah, there were a lot of box sets this year, I think, compared to years past. I'm racking my brain, but there weren't a lot the year before, I don't believe. Maybe a couple. There's the Decalogue was a big one, but yeah. Well, we had a good New Year here, and I did want to give a shout-out to Jonathan James, who is a super fan of both of us, both of our shows, which and he's just a great guy. I enjoy hearing his commentary about our episodes and your episodes, too. But he put together a top five Criterion Now episodes, which I thought was a lot of fun, and he... and his favorite was the Arrow Now episode, which I guess is technically part of our series. And Sean Baker and some others, but he mentioned Arrow Now as being the most expensive episode in history.
Probably.
And that was actually the case for me too. I bought a lot of stuff because of that episode. And in fact, the Romare set arrived this past weekend.
I saw those pictures. That is such a beautiful set. I envy you a great deal for that one.
Yeah, well, I just started the set with Percival, and I've only watched about 20 minutes. I was distracted with some other stuff this weekend, but I can already say that it's well worth it. But yeah, Arrow was fun, and maybe one day we'll have you guys on one of those Arrow episodes.
Heck yeah, because we are. Heck yeah. I think this year, if you combine, maybe not completely Arrow, but if you look, say, Arrow, Vinegar Syndrome, and Severin, I might have spent more on those things than I did on Criterion this year when you put them all together.
Throw Mondo in there.
Oh, Mondo Macabro. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely that would push it over the top.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. We actually are recording one in a couple weeks, so that'll be Arrow Now too. And then, but yeah, it's something I want to, it's not something we'll do all the time, just because it's being a predominantly UK label with some US releases. there's just not as much to talk about. And also, I think they, the way Criterion parcels out everything, there's more grist for the mill. But speaking of which, we could. Do you want to talk about the New Year's drawing? Did you?
Yeah.
Were you excited about?
I think I'm in the same boat as everyone else in that I am a third disappointed in it, and that so much of it was devoted to Filmstruck stuff that we sort of already knew.
Yeah, that's definitely been the consensus. But what about the new stuff that we think is coming? Are there any new titles that are pointed out here that excite or not excite you?
We mentioned Bergman earlier. I think I'm most excited for the Bergman box.
Yeah, that's still a reach. I think we'll touch
on
that
maybe.
In a moment.
It's a maybe.
Yeah,
I'm just putting it out there.
Sure,
it's the secret.
It's happening.
And
I think it's happening.
If I say it, it will happen.
Right. Reach for the stars.
Not sure that the clue speaks to that. That one clue. But yeah, I think it is happening. Just curious, what are your thoughts on Bowling for Columbine?
I liked it, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. It was a thing I saw in the theater week of release and then haven't thought much about since then. And I don't know if it's because we've been so inundated by those circumstances that thinking back on it, it doesn't feel unique anymore, sad to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy.
If I was going to choose Michael Moore, I might have chose Roger and Me instead, if you're looking at sort of keystone films in their filmography, both in terms of what it did for their career, public impact. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay as an inclusion. I'm not entirely thrilled, although I am curious to see what bonus material would now be included with it.
Yeah, I think that's the clincher. It might be kind of depressing to watch now. I mean, it was even then it did not paint a beautiful picture of humanity or the U.S. It's a pretty scary film actually. But a lot of what he, I guess, discussed or warned us about, I think, has materialized. And I think gun control is still very much, well, of course, it's obviously very much an issue in, you know, in politically, culturally, it's a big deal, and we're in a unique environment right now. Anyway, I'm sure we'll be talking about that when it comes out. Any other titles? Any of the foreign? I think Color of Pomegranates is one that's
a big one that I'm excited about. We have that Parajanov box set right now, but okay. Those transfers in that are not the best. So I am super excited to see it get dressed up a little bit. I would also love to see Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors come out of that box and get a nice upgrade.
I tried to watch that. It might have been YouTube, and it was such a bad transfer that I didn't bother. But that's another one that I'd like to revisit or visit for the first time. But Other Side of Hope, you probably haven't seen that yet.
No, but it's coming to Austin Film Society this week, so we get to go this week.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, it's coming to our theater, I think, next month. So, yeah, it's touring. I'm on the fence whether to go to just wait for the disc or because, yeah, you know me, I'm going to buy it anyway. Virgin Suicides?
I just sort of shrug my shoulders a little bit at that. I enjoy that one probably the most of all of Sofia Coppola, but I can't say that I was waiting for it.
Yeah, that's probably even more than Lost in Translation.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. I think that's definitely the consensus high point of her career. At least it is my favorite of hers. But yeah, I don't remember it very well. So I did see it a while ago. There's something there that I missed, but I think it's decent. But not well. It's the clue is right next to The Scarlet Empress. So
yeah.
Kind of tough to compare Sternberg and Coppola, you know, although it's tough to compare Sternberg and anybody, in fairness.
I think that it stands, if you want to look at things films that are much more interesting than, say, the work of someone who shall remain nameless at this point in the podcast, who focus on young people, I think it's a really interesting view, and I love the use of music in it. I think it's the most intriguing and the most natural and organic of her films.
That's fair. I think that's one strength she has, is she's really great at using music. And in fact, I think pop music or sometimes alt pop. I mean, she's married to the guy from Phoenix, so I guess that's, you know, that's in her wheelhouse. But yeah, no, I will be curious how that plays again. Anyway, do you want to get into some Criterion news stuff?
Sure.
Or is there any other thoughts?
No, I think we're good. Well, we're ready to go.
We have a little bit of a controversial week this week because there was a big release that came out. You may have heard of The Breakfast Club.
I have.
So, I am definitely on a specific side of that controversy.
Speaking of divisive, I can't wait to hear it, Cole. So I did get it, and I watched it this week. It came out the day after New Year's on the 2nd. I'll also mention that Young Mr. Lincoln is coming out next week, and then the week after that, we have I, Daniel Blake. But The Breakfast Club is probably going to dominate, I think, a lot of conversations. So I did watch it again, but I'd seen it 20 times. Shout out to Doug. But Cole, I'm going to save your... Erica, what do you think of The Breakfast Club? Or do you have any opinions?
I do have some opinions. Mine are not as divisive possibly as Cole's, but I think I come from a perspective of I've also seen it many times, not quite to 20. I would say probably 5 or 6. I saw it in the theater when it came out. I was of the right age for it. And when I look at specifically the comments that were left on the Criterion page for the film, I think that tells you everything that you need to know. These people were very clearly profoundly touched by the film at a very specific time. I'm not sure how many of them have come back to it with a more critical eye. I would also say my life has been changed, and I'm not trying to use hyperbole here, it really was, by Cole introducing me to the work of Bill Forsyth in Gregory's Girl. So when I understand what came before, because I didn't then, I thought John Hughes was creating this basically as a lightning bolt from Zeus, and that he was speaking directly to me, which, if I had thought about it, it would have seemed very odd for a 30-some-year-old man to be doing this and to not necessarily have progressed. So I would hope that people might dig a little bit deeper, but I do not want to throw the water on anybody who gets so excited about something like this, and if it inspires them to watch anything else, that's only a good thing.
That's a good take. I actually have not seen Gregory's Girl, so thank you for that recommendation. I don't know, is it readily available, or is that
Yeah, you can get that in Region 1. Some of Bill Forsyth's stuff is harder to come by, like Comfort and Joy, I think you can't get in Region 1 as easily. Gregory's Girl is not so hard to get. It is one of the greatest teen comedies I've ever seen.
That's one thing with the conversation, and actually I didn't read the comments. I'm actually kind of scared about comments on Criterion website these days, and I was actually pretty scared of that one because it is a little divisive, but people do seem to forget that there were some other teen comedies out there. 3 O'Clock High is a big one that doesn't get mentioned much. So Cole, bring it.
Allow me to be the one to throw the water if you don't want to do it.
I will tell you before we hear Cole's diatribe that it's all love on that page. I mean, it's like proselytizing. Really? Yeah.
And that's pretty fair. I think a lot of it's a very popular movie, and it's aged very well. One thing before Cole brings his hate, Mark, my good friend and podcasting partner, Mark Herney, just his daughter got excited to see it. And, you know, this is a 1984 movie, isn't it? So it's to her, she's like, oh, this is not one of those old and weird movies. That she usually Criterion brings out, but you know, 1984 was a long time ago. That's not exactly yesterday. So, although I would say it's probably not very weird, but anyway, Cole, let's see what you have to say.
Well, it takes off on a little bit about what Erica was saying about it came to people at a very 85. Specific time in their lives. Have I ever mentioned to you, or have you heard me talk about my green eggs and ham theory?
No, let's hear it.
Green Eggs and Ham is a great book when you are 3 years old. But you are allowed to put it down and move on to something more adult, something more nuanced. You don't stick there for the rest of your life, 10, 15, 20 years later, going back and trying to go onto internet forums and tell everyone what an amazing experience it is, as if it's happening right now. You are allowed to leave things behind. And that's what I want to do with this one. Even more so 16 candles. I get all mixed up in that. I lose it when I think of 16 candles. This one doesn't bother me as much. It's not as problematic.
It's the reverse for me.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm. You could say make that same argument about Star Wars, actually, that you have that childhood nostalgia, and I think everybody sees Star Wars when they're a child. Not many people in their 50s say, oh, I'm going to check out this. Who's this George Lucas guy? So you really have no interest then, Cole?
Don't get me started on Star Wars.
We're not going to Star Wars. And, yeah. So no to John Hughes?
I am not his biggest booster. I would probably watch The Breakfast Club again, give it a little bit of a chance, see what's in it. I would not bother, although I'll probably own it for completion's sake, I will never crack the cellophane on 16 candles.
And I don't know if it's going to happen, actually, 16 candles. It's weird good. That they hinted that at it, and then The Breakfast Club came out. Sorry, Erica, what were you going to say?
John Hughes stole whole sections of 16 Candles from Gregory's Girl.
Really?
I mean, straight up lifted. Huh. It was not an independent creation.
Interesting. Okay, well,
I should say... since we so heartily endorse Gregory's Girl, the parts that there are no rape sequences in Gregory's Girl that were lifted for 16 Candles. Let's just that up right away.
That's true. Okay.
All right. Well, that's okay. Well, enough said. I think if 16 Candles does come out, I'm going to definitely hook up with Gregory's Girl. That's a terrible sentence. I'm going to find Gregory's Girl and watch it. I'd seen it a lot, and I will say that I saw it as a child, and you know, not making the Star Wars analogy, but it did speak to me as a child. You know, you have your different social cliques, and I was probably didn't adhere to either one of the five portrayed in the film, but I was probably in between, and I think that everybody can find somebody in adolescence they can identify with in this film. And I watched it so much, or, you know, you just can't escape it. It's been on TV, be at friends' houses, and they'll watch it. So there were some lines in the film I'd heard when I rewatched it, and I thought, oh, wow, that was from there. I'd forgotten about that have kind of entered the public lexicon. But it is interesting watching it now as an adult, and I'm not a parent, but seeing the perspective of a parent, or seeing it from an adult perspective. Nobody's a perfect parent, and you could see how, like, just the littlest thing you might do might, like, a small ripple might be like a giant wave for a kid and cause them to have this angst. I think it's a very good film, and I still enjoyed watching it. It's very entertaining for basically a you know, 5, 6, 7 character one set film, basically. But it's not up there with Tarkovsky or Mother or some other films I love, but I think it is worth revisiting. So Cole, I know you threw your angry water at it, but yeah, I'm curious if you have a different take.
I will certainly give it a try. I trust Criterion to at least make me see it in a different light when you talk about all the supporting material that comes with it. I don't have high hopes for it, but I will certainly I'll take an open-minded approach to this one. I will not for 16 Candles.
Okay. Well,
that's on record. We'll just say that's okay. That.
I was thinking specifically of Mark's daughter's face in that picture that he posted when I was...
Yeah.
If something gets a young person excited, I think that's great. I really hope, just from a psychological standpoint, that she doesn't try to fixate too closely on identifying with any of those people. I don't want to send young people down that route. But that's my end of my 2 cents there.
Well, I actually warned Mark that, hey, this, after I watched it, knowing that he was going to watch it with his daughter, I said, hey, this might not be the most comfortable movie to watch with a daughter. You know, there's some, it's not just the R-rated elements, but the commentary on parenting. So I think as a kid, I would find it difficult to watch this with my parents, just because I think even if I'm not one of those characters, something would speak to me, and I think it's an experience I need to come to on my own terms. But anyway, that I think that actually speaks to his parenting, that he doesn't want to shelter her and wants her to experience it. But apparently she liked it okay, but not as much as 16 Candles. So there you go, Cole. So, well, before we move on, do you have any thoughts about the other two upcoming releases, Young Mr. Lincoln and I, Daniel Blake, if you've seen them.
Young Mr. Lincoln, I've seen, and I like okay. If I was going to pick Abe Lincoln movies to put in the collection to memorialize for all time, I would rather have Abe Lincoln in Illinois with Raymond Massey. That is the definitive Abe Lincoln movie for me. This one I like, but I don't love. It's very well made, but it doesn't knock my socks off.
And unfortunately, I haven't seen I, Daniel Blake yet.
Yeah, you probably like Ken Loach, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a new Ken Loach. It's good. I don't think any. Well, I shouldn't say I shouldn't put people's opinions in their mouths, but it's not one of his best. But it's again, it speaks to modern times and to current culture and where we are in this wacky world. But it's a good film. I think I'm with you on Mr. Lincoln, Cole. I'd say it's a good film, but I'd say it's lesser Ford. Mm-hmm. And I haven't thought of his Lincoln films as a genre. I can't really think off the top of my head of my favorite Lincoln films. Just the two that pop out are this one and the Spielberg, which are both okay. So I haven't seen Abe Lincoln in Illinois, you said?
Yeah, that one is fantastic. If you like classic films, if you like period films, it was made probably pretty contemporaneously with Young Mr. Lincoln in the mid to early 40s, I would guess. Mm-hmm.
And Ruth Gordon as Mary Todd Lincoln, mm-hmm. Pretty fantastic.
Yeah, she's great in it.
Wow. Huh. It's weird to think of her acting in the 40s, but of course she did. I will look for that, but yeah, we're starting the year off, so there you go, with a bang, with the Breakfast Club, or maybe a whimper for Cole. So I guess we have to talk about this guy named Bergman. we're in 2018 now, so it is the year of his centennial. So July is going to be his birthday. I think it was July 15th, was
July
it?
July 14th, I think.
14th.
Somewhere right
Thank
around
you.
There.
In that ballpark. So Bergman 100, and there's already a lot of buzz about Bergman 100, and we have talked about the Janus touring restoration, retrospective, I should say, with some restorations. So that's, there was actually a trailer for Janus Films' tour, and it looks, boy, it looks amazing.
Yeah,
I wish I could just watch it all, and I think I could stay up for 2-3 days straight and watch it all. Now I might come out of that questioning a lot of things, but yeah, though it looks just fantastic. But there was a post on the Daily Criterion's little column from David Hudson that just outlined all the different centennial, I guess, celebrations, you could say, or distributions, you know, all types of things. One thing it did not mention was Janus/Criterion, which I think was a notable omission. And then on Twitter, there was a mention about Janus Films doing a restoration of, I think it was The Silence, wasn't it?
Winter Light.
Winter Light. New restoration coming soon. So I'm not going to ask, do you like Bergman? Because I know the answer to that question. But and we'll just act under the assumption this is happening. But how freaked out are you about this?
Well, we're going all the way to Oslo to participate in it. So, well, that was a happy accident, but we're making definite
that
plans to be Nordic when this thing kicks off.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Jonathan James earlier, I remember him talking about going to Bergman Isle and seeing, and I think he's doing that again this year for the 100th centennial. But he mentioned that he had trouble with some of the screenings. Also, there was a play, which of course was in Swedish, but so, needless to say, you guys are buying this whatever edition this becomes, assuming it becomes something, right?
Yes, definitely.
So we'll just say that let's assume that all 24 films are coming to disc somehow, and I'm sure you'll see a couple of them in Oslo. Which, yeah, you have my envy there. But how would you tackle this? Are you gonna? Do you have any plans for the year of Bergman aside from going to Sweden?
I think I want to start with favorites is how I would do it, and then just
really?
Sort of work my way toward
That's
the fringes big. From there.
I think that I would have to start with chronology.
Well, that's something you're going to have to settle because you're in the same household.
Yeah,
so unless there's going to be two rooms of Bergman films.
We have enough TVs that we
that's
can handle
true.
It.
How are you going to open that box, though, and not start with Persona? How are you going to open that box and not start with Fanny and Alexander?
Well, okay. That's the one that I'm really hoping is playing when we're there. Mm-hmm. That's my fingers crossed selection. But I've seen fewer than you have, for sure, and probably fewer than a lot of people who are Bergman lovers have. And so I feel like to really get my education, I've got to start from the beginning.
Good point.
Have you seen his early work? There's an Eclipse set, and there's some others that I think haven't come out from Criterion, but
we have those Eclipse. We have that Eclipse set, and I've seen them, but I don't think you've seen them, right?
I have not. I've just seen some big highlights, but that's really it. And they were kind of chosen at random, so there wasn't really any theme or rhyme or reason to what I got to when I did.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect the peak of his career by any stretch. They're okay, but. Yeah, I think because I'm not as interested in the early films, I probably would not go chronologically, or at least. But I think I'm, assuming we get everything, I think I'll start with his summer films and then go chronologically. Persona is the only one that's playing theatrically here in my town, which is a blessing and a disappointment because I can't wait to see that on the big screen. But I also would love to see 20 others on the big screen. But I think beyond that, I think I will go chronologically. And some of those, there are a few gaps. Like I haven't seen Winter Light yet or The Silence. So those are two, I think those are probably the only two of his major works I haven't seen. Have you seen Winter Light, since we know that's, I think we can expect that to come this year?
It's been years for me, but yes, that one I have seen. It looks amazing. And I am so excited about what this restoration might look like on top of that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, not to compare Bergman to Breakfast Club or John Hughes by any stretch, but I think a lot of these I've seen a long time ago, because I think Bergman is one of those gateway art film directors, and it's been a while since I've seen some of those films, so I think they might speak to me differently now. It's probably been about 15 years since I've seen Through a Glass Darkly, and that moved me a lot then, but it'll probably, probably speak to me differently now. Aside from the obvious Persona, Fanny Alexander, are there any in this grouping of films that you recommend are high points for him?
I was super excited to see just a snippet of Scenes from a Marriage in that trailer. That is the one sort of that bubbles under, I think, that a lot of people don't think about or necessarily want to take on because of whatever reason. It was made for television. It's much longer than a lot of standard feature films. That is the one that I'm saying, if you sort of skip around and you've overlooked that one, go back to that one.
As a matter of fact, I have overlooked that one. I have the DVD, which I'm going to leave on the shelf for now, but I just have not made the commitment. So yeah, I guess that's three major works of his I haven't seen. Erica, do you have any favorites that I guess I could say unlikely favorites or unique favorites?
I don't think I have any unique favorites. I will go back to thinking about the chronology again, because I think, like with someone, for example, Tarkovsky, I think they change as we age, which is what you had touched upon a moment ago. And so that's why I want to see, knowing what I know of him, which I didn't know when I was younger, I want to have that inform a bit of what I see when I see it. Especially with the marriage films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and actually, the way I didn't know what kind of a director what kind of a person he was. But knowing some of the things I know now, I think that, and actually knowing how he had great relationships with his actresses, but he was very tough on them too. So that will probably actually inform my viewings. So either way, I think this is just going to be such a fantastic year for film. Whether it's home media or theatrical, or in Oslo, it's going to be awesome time. So yay. There was another little piece of news that was parceled out from Instagram, and that was from Filmstruck's Instagram account. Now we'll talk a little bit about Instagram about Filmstruck later, but they did place No Country for Old Men on the Criterion channel, and it had a little Criterion C, and somebody asked, hey, is this coming to Criterion, on their Instagram? They said, oh, yeah, it is. And a lot of people are skeptical. I don't know. Should we make the flip a coin joke? So first off, I'll ask, do you have opinions on No Country for Old Men, or Do you think it would be, would it make sense?
I think it would absolutely make sense. It is a desert island choice for me. I have a very particular relationship with that movie, and a lot of it has to do with me and my father and how I perceive our movement through what is essentially the American West out here.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I definitely think it belongs in the collection. It's probably also our most downloaded episode, so I know a lot of people really gravitate to that film. Both
that's
the
right.
people
I forgot
on the art house side of things and just general cinema goers, it's one that they can relate to as well.
We did it very early on, and it continues to grow. It's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah.
Hmm. I remember listening to it way. Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, that was a great episode. I just had not remembered that. But yeah, I think, I guess the question is not only if, what, does it make sense, but does it, I think it makes sense to be part of the library, but is it, does it make sense that it could become part of the library? So do you guys think there's anything to this?
I definitely think so, especially since we've had the inclusion of Blood Simple now.
Mm-hmm.
You could go and pick, you know, at random, a half a dozen great Coen titles that all would make sense to be. And I don't know what the rights issues are, but
right,
yeah. I think, yeah, it both makes sense in terms of does it belong and can it belong? I think
yes,
I wouldn't be surprised
both.
To see it.
Yeah, and it's one of those recent studio titles, so I think the rights are muddy. I think it's actually Lionsgate. Did the home media, which doesn't bode well. But on the other hand, you have the Coens, who are probably among the most powerful, if you're going to call them art directors or art film directors in Hollywood. I think that's fair. You know, them, David Lynch, maybe Wes Anderson. I think they could probably influence where a film lands beyond, you know, some contract that somebody signed with a French label. But yeah, I think it could happen. I think it would be extremely popular, of course, as you noted. It's get a lot of downloads. It would sell a lot of units as well. But I'm curious what they would do with it that other studios haven't done. I think if Blood Simple is an indication, I think that would be under very capable hands. And yeah, I hope it's true. I'm not believing it yet, because just knowing social media, there are a lot of people that handle these accounts, and they're generally pretty smart people. But I think Filmstruck is handled by people in Atlanta that work for CNN and TCM. Mm. So I don't know that they would know what's on coming out on Criterion, and I don't know if they would know if they'd be allowed to speak for them. So yeah,
it's along the lines of me saying that there's a Bergman box coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, extremely wishful thinking.
Somewhere out there, Matt Gasteyer is shaking his head at me, saying, "No, this is never going to happen."
Yeah, actually, Matt is probably, I think Matt was one of those that has said it's never going to happen. So, but on that note, there's one that looks like it's definitely going to happen, is Memories of Underdevelopment. So that is actually screening this week at Film Forum with a new restoration, 4K restoration from Janus Films. And this is the Cuban classic from 1968. And I this is one I haven't seen, and I'm eagerly anticipating it. Have you guys seen it? You guys have seen a lot of films, especially you, Cole.
I think we're in the same boat. I think we all three have not seen it and are really excited about it. And knowing what I know about how the Janus schedule ends up here, I'm really right. hopeful that Austin Film Society brings this in very soon.
I think it'll end up being my first Cuban film.
Really?
Yeah, it might
really?
Be.
Huh. I'm trying to think of Cuban. I know I've seen Cuban films, but yeah, it'll be it's a big one. I'm actually gonna I'm gonna go Cuban films. I'm sure I've seen some.
I Am Cuba. Yo Soy Cuba. You haven't seen?
Oh, still haven't seen that.
Oh boy,
Buena Vista Social Club.
I can't put Buena Vista in there. That's not quite the same.
You don't.
You're right.
Okay,
that doesn't count. Oh, Lucia, I've seen that. Soy Cuba is, I think, if you like Tarkovsky, and if you do you like, I forget how to say his name, the guy that directed Soy Cuba, was it Kal Lysatov?
That I'm not 100% sure about the pronunciation.
That's okay. He did The Cranes Are Flying, Letter Never Sent, so I could see him being up your alley. Definitely, I think you'd like him, Erica. And then speaking of new restorations and different aesthetic, though, we have a new restoration from of Salesman, the Maisels film, is either, yeah, it's coming out. So that bodes well for a Salesman. Do you guys like, speaking of documentary film and Bill Morrison, not that they're the same style, but are you guys like Salesman?
Yeah, it's at the top of my list.
I think this was the single biggest piece of news in this roster that you were the most excited about,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is also 1968, and it's a Janus Films. I think we gleaned, well, actually, I think the people on Reddit found it from, I think from the Film Forum, or maybe, no, I'm sorry, I think it was the Metrograph is going to show it in on the 26th. So, yeah, I think this is a different type of, if you think of salespeople today, you don't think of the people from this film. And at that time, I think it was a dying breed. They were selling Bibles. So it's not only an engaging look at humanity, but it's also like a time capsule look at a really dead occupation. So I can't wait to rewatch this. I think that a film like this, it was probably shot in 16, so sometimes those restorations don't get the most out of it, but it'll probably look pretty good. Cole, do you like Salesman?
I do. It is one of my favorite documentaries ever. I would say, especially when you're looking at the early days of the collection, that and Harlan County, USA are probably the two big powerhouse documentaries for me that Criterion has ever released, maybe.
I'm with you. We've got that nice Grey Gardens set.
That's true.
Well,
there's Grey Gardens, too.
Yeah, those are all three terrific. Yeah, so hopefully this happens. And then we have the Cannes Film Festival coming out, and I was actually kind of pleased with this news that Cate Blanchett is going to be the jury president, which she's not a director, but she's, an actress I respect, and she has a tendency to be in some pretty great films. So does she move your needle? Erica?
She does mine very much. And even if she didn't have the incredible filmography that she does, she is an amazing theater professional as well, a producer, a writer, an actor. I was also saying, speaking of Oslo, how amazing it would be if we could see her in Hedda Gabler while we were there. That would also me sending the words up into the heavens. But yeah, she's amazing.
And, you know, this has been, 2017 was a very interesting year in a lot of respects, but I'd say it was the year of not only exposure of a lot of terrible people, but it was really the year of women getting more of a face and a voice in the circle, entertainment circles. And I'd say that Blanchett is somebody who's always had that voice, so it's, but I don't know that women, I'd have to look if there's been many women presidents. I just think that having somebody with her taste, and it's not just the film she's chosen, but you can tell that she likes good films. I think films that we would like. So I don't know. I'm curious how this will play out. What do you think about Cate Blanchett, Cole?
I'm a huge fan. I think she's a fantastic choice for that. Everything I've ever seen her, both in terms of her interviews and her body of work, makes me think this is a thoughtful and powerful and compassionate and complex person. So I am really looking forward to what effect she might have on the way this goes this year.
I think she's one of the smartest people working, just in general.
She is. And by the way, she's the 12th female Cannes president. So that, even though, you know, that's a pretty low percentage, but that's actually, you know, compared to Hollywood, that's pretty good, actually. And boy, I don't Google that, because there's something pissed me off. There's some ugliness too about, and that's unfortunate part of our culture. So anyway, I'm curious what the lineup looks like. I guess we'll probably find out in a few weeks. Probably about a month or two. Right?
I want to say a month, give or take.
Yeah. And hopefully a good classic lineup too, but yeah. All right, well, do we want to talk about some short takes? Have you seen any Criterions recently?
We have.
Start with.
Do you want to go
first?
How
about you, Cole?
Oh, sure, I'll go first.
You pick.
We had the distinct luxury of going to see the new Joan of Arc restoration in the theater, and it's going to be worth the wait.
Really?
Yeah, it was so good. And I'm not normally a huge fan of contemporary scores for silent films, especially for a film that was intended to be viewed completely silently. But we saw the one with the collaboration between the guys from Goldfrapp and Portishead. That was the score that they played this for this screening. And terrific. I would say 80% of it worked pretty well. What did you think?
Absolutely. It was my first time seeing it, and I knew what to expect. And I think maybe I wasn't quite a fan of the score as you might have been. Mm. But it was an incredible revelatory experience, to use the word again.
We've all used that word now, so this is a revelatory episode.
It works for Joan of Arc, for sure.
So is it very a modern type of score, or do they, because obviously Portishead and Goldfrapper are very modern, well, I guess compared to 1928 modern, but does it fit?
I think it fits, especially during the torture sequences, when you get to the torture chamber of the whole thing. It's not as electronic as you might think. There are choral elements to it. I think for the most part, it works really well. And it's a nice bridge between a more classic style and an electronic style.
So it's not an hour and a half of Portishead, basically.
No, not at all.
Okay, because that would be interesting, but I don't think that would necessarily fit. So that comes out, I think, a couple months from now, right?
Is it on the March slate? Is that what it's on?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, March 20th. So we have a while.
Yeah, but, I can't wait to see it now after having seen it. I've seen the DVD release of it a number of times now, but this experience, it looks so great, and it is still absolutely infuriating. When those cowardly bastards, speaking of, you know, things meshing with contemporary politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, and speaking of some Bergman films that I haven't seen in a while, this is one I've seen actually, like you, Cole, I almost called you Can, like you, I've seen a few times, but it's been at least 5 years, maybe longer. So I think this is definitely ripe for revisitation. And, you know, the cover's really come around on that. I just pulled it up and it just really looks great. Mm. Erica, do you have one?
I do. And this came during the Christmas season. And Cole pulled this out for me when we were looking for Christmas films to watch. And that was Blast of Silence.
I haven't seen that. Okay.
It is fantastic. It comes out of nowhere, at least for me, like a windburn. And we've got writer-director star Alan Barron, and this was his labor of love, a Christmas noir. It is incredible, it's assured, it's determined, it's truly great. It shows you what real people really looked like. It also has some great extras. There were multiple interviews with Alan Barron, whom I had never heard of. And he had pretty strong artistic underpinnings before he came to this, which was his debut film. And so you can see that he hit the ground running with this. So I highly recommend it.
Well, you know, this is really a blind spot for me. I forgot it was actually on Criterion, but I had to look it up. And yeah, I think I just skipped over it for some reason. So you recommend it. It was 1961. Yeah, looks something like. Looks interesting.
Yeah, if you like bleak, grim crime films to pep up your holidays.
I know I do.
It's a great choice.
It's a very blue Christmas and a different meaning. Yeah, actually, the comments are neo-noir Christmas, so sounds like my alley. Maybe I'll wait for next Christmas to
watch. It's definitely
that.
A holiday feel-good thing.
Okay, well, and maybe it'll get upgraded. Who knows? Sometimes those are kind of random. And I didn't expect Idi Amin Dada to get upgraded, but it did, and I'm kind of glad it did. Well, mine is A Woman is a Woman. Was Une Femme. I can't remember the print. I think it's Une Femme et la Femme or something like that. But that's also 1961 Godard, Jean-Luc. So and this is becoming a theme of this episode. This is one of the first Godard films I saw. And I saw this, I want to say it was after Breathless, and it was once I was just kind of jumping in. And as you probably have experienced on your own, Godard's not an easy fellow to just jump into his world. I think some time is useful. I kind of wish I'd been around when his stuff was just coming out, and the impact it was making, and seeing a new one every year, or, you know, sometimes twice a year. Actually, he was pretty prolific, but you know, he is experimental and whimsical, but often often in a kind of like a capricious manner. You know, I think you think of like Weekend. You know, he's very cynical and not altogether pleasant, but he would definitely tweak with conventions. And I'd say this is probably the most uplifting and pleasant and almost comedic lightest film of in his oeuvre. So I did enjoy it, and I think I enjoyed it a lot more than I do his other work, just because, yeah, I think sometimes lightness is appropriate and is welcoming. So yeah, I thought it was quite a romp, but on the other end, it's light and it's easy to watch, but it's also, speaking of subverting genres, it kind of does, you know, it is him giving the finger to a lot of other films. So are you fans?
Yes, yeah, very much.
We actually got to see this on the big screen too, and that was a really great experience.
Yeah.
Ooh, I bet it was. Yeah, I love the camera work too. Just like the scenes in the one scene that sticks out to me is the one in the apartment with the him riding his bicycle around. Mm. And you know, the way they probably stage that is probably not exactly fancy. You know, it's not like probably today they'd use CG, unfortunately, but it works so well. And yeah, he really was a master of his craft, even if I don't always love his films. I've come around to him more, I think, as I've aged. Have you had that experience?
I think more so Godard than Truffaut, definitely. But I like it thorny and complicated and sort of provocative anyway. You know, Cassavetes is my favorite, so I tend to fall on that end of the spectrum. I would much rather have a tumultuous experience with a director that I don't necessarily agree with, as long as I'm not bored. And Godard is never boring to me, for sure.
He sure is not.
And I came to him as a young person as well, and my degree's in French, so I have maybe a particular love for those sorts of things. And he had an amazing muse in Anna Karenina.
He did, and I actually, my wife likes me to tell her what actresses I find attractive, and I can rarely think of any that like I think she would find interesting. But Anna Karenina, I stopped the film and I said, "You wanted to know an actress I find attractive is Anna Karenina," and it's not just her looks, but just her her bombast and just how she carries herself and her personality. You know, she's just a terrific engaging figure to watch on screen, and yeah, she's revelatory.
A certain je ne sais quoi.
I didn't know you had a French degree. You roll your R's very well. I noticed that when listening to your end of the year episode, so now I know why. I can't do that, and I took French too, but I cannot do my R's. You love Karenina?
I do. She is lighter than air, and I think that she was so ideally suited to this. It also makes me think of, can I throw in an honorable mention of Umbrellas Please. Of Cherbourg, which I got to see in 2017. So another change up of the musical convention with two actresses that are amazing.
And actually, I think that's a great comparison of a film that's dark in tone and subject matter, just like A Woman is a Woman in a way, in certain ways, but the presentation is light. So I think that those two films actually kind of weirdly pair well. So shall we talk about some Filmstruck?
Certainly.
So, well, we haven't talked about a whole lot. Obviously, we took the year off, We took the New Year's weekend off, although Mark and I did have a Christmas episode, but there have been a couple weeks since then. And so I'll just talk about the main channel real quick. And first off, I should mention that they released the lineup for January, and it's not terrific. It's a little lighter than usual, but I think that's probably because they, you know, took time off in the holidays, so they're not producing a lot of stuff. But so the director of the week this week was, speaking of people that are divisive, was Lars von Trier. So love or hate, or neither. I'll start with you, Erica. What are your thoughts on Lars von Trier?
You know what? I'm going to pass because I don't have actually enough. I haven't seen enough to comment either way. And that is my true pass.
True pass. Okay, well, Cole.
I would say love the work, wouldn't want to hang out with the guy.
Please don't have. Yeah, please don't direct me, please. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. No. Would not want to work with the guy for sure. And in fact, that's again speaking of how weird this world is. You know, he had some headlines about him, and he's always had headlines that are not very, very favorable. I don't think anybody would ever say Lars von Trier is a great specimen of humanity. So I don't like him, but I do sometimes love his work. So that makes it difficult sometimes in not just modern times, but always. I think it's always difficult to separate the art from the artist. Do you think Erica would like some of his work?
I think she would. There are certain things that we would definitely probably include in an episode one of these days, and they are beautiful to look at for sure. If we had to start with one, we would just probably jump right in with the most traumatic, which I think is Antichrist.
And I was going to say,
work our way out from there.
I adored Nymphomaniac.
So there is
really
That's still kind of why I'm passing, because I still haven't seen a lot of other things, but I love Nymphomaniac.
Have you seen Dancer in the Dark?
No.
Really?
That will crush you.
Exactly. That there,
Breaking
there are
the
things,
waves?
No, there are things that I specifically have not gotten to because the time hasn't felt right. Mm-hmm.
So you could work your way backward.
Yeah.
If you liked Nymphomaniac, are you bothered by certain things, by like violence on screen?
No.
Erica? Okay. Yeah, I think you'll like Mother. Not spoiling, but you probably have a better chance of liking Mother than my wife did. Well, I would say you're in for a treat, but I would never call Lars von Trier. I would say he's a good filmmaker, but I would not call him a treat.
A journey, let's say.
A journey, yes. And then the other director of the week that we haven't gotten to is Frank Borzage. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He's a classic Hollywood, really kind of a studio director, but he had some good work. And I didn't write down the films of his I'd seen, but I think some of my favorites are probably not on the Filmstruck list. But Cole, are you a Borzage fan?
I am. I'm a big fan. And the one I'm looking forward to most that I haven't gotten to that they have on Filmstruck right now is History is Made at Night. Because when you're talking about actresses that really do it for me for a lot of reasons, just in terms of I find them to be a compelling and attractive thing that I am drawn to, Jean Arthur is definitely that. I cannot tell you how much great. I like Jean Arthur.
Yeah, he also did Desire with Dietrich. He's done some good work. That one's not on the list. I haven't seen a lot of these, and I do love my classic Hollywood, but there's Lazy Bones, Lilium, A Farewell to Arms, of course, Hemingway. I'm not going to list them all, but there's a few here, so I probably won't get to any of them. Erica, have you seen any Borzage?
I looked at the list, and I think that I've actually not, which is surprising for me.
Yeah, he's not the biggest name in classic Hollywood for sure, but I think I've read more about him than I've seen because I read a lot of film books. So I think he was bigger in his day than he's remembered today. So I like that they spotlight people like him.
Definitely. I was going to say, actually, when you started talking about January maybe not being the strongest month, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, because I think this selection, for instance, is a great one because to me, from what I've seen of him, maybe not quite the filmmaker that John Ford was, but I think he definitely deserves to be included in the conversation with people like Raoul Walsh, for instance. So, yeah, I'm really glad he's getting a spotlight for sure.
Good comparison. Yeah, and by the way, the January month is just the Criterion Channel. I will say that the main channel has just been knocking it out of the park, especially the last 6 months or so. So in that sense, I'm not as bothered by the one-third of the clue. If they're going to keep bringing stuff like this or trying to one-up themselves, then maybe that's worth that valuable real estate. Let's see. There's also starring Josephine Baker, and I actually haven't seen a lot from Josephine Baker, at least not in a while. I don't think I've seen any of these. Erica, Josephine Baker?
I think I've only seen one thing, and it was so long ago, and it was more like in a documentary setting, not as being able to explore her work.
Yeah, and I actually don't think of her as a film. You know, obviously, she's a musician, too, but I think she's a musician, right?
Yeah, she is. She was a singer.
Yeah. Cole?
No, this is another one of those blind spots for me that I'm really anxious to dig into, because I think, like you or like a lot of people, I've seen prominent clips recycled over and over again, and those clips are
Yes.
electrifying. But I would really like to see those things in context, so I'm glad that this is there right now.
Yeah, the one thing that FilmStruck makes me wish for is more time. I think, and I watch a lot of movies. Oh boy, I think I watched like 40-something movies in December, which is, yeah, that's a lot for me. But still, there's so many I could have time for or could make time for. There was also speaking of salesmen, there was a grouping called Life of a Salesman, and I don't remember what was in that. Let me pull it up, but. Yeah, one thing with oh, here it is. FilmStruck, they kind of cycle in a weird way. So, the Maisels salesman was on there, as was Death of a Salesman, the Schlondorf, Glengarry Glen Ross, Winnebago Man, which I think is an underappreciated documentary, a lot of fun. And I haven't seen Serie Noire. Is that right, Erica? No, probably not.
You know what? I'm not looking at it. You'd have to spell it for me.
Seirie, and then noir with an E in the end.
Série noire.
Oh, you're awesome. I see
Thanks.
why you married her. Cool. So, any thoughts on salespeople? Or salesmen, I guess. And they are all men in this context.
It seems like such an interesting way to look at the topic. I can't wait to dig into those, and it's got some of my favorites on there.
Yeah, it's a really strong curated selection, I feel like, and a wide variety for a pretty narrow band of humanity. I think there's a lot of different facets of the lifestyle and of just the general outlook that are represented by those choices. So I think this is going to be, especially for people who have never seen anything like this, it's a fantastic variety to start with.
This is what I want teens to dig into.
Instead of John
Yes.
Hughes,
Yes.
start with this
Start
instead.
with this.
The soul-crushing monotony
Go
of
with
going door
or
to
Death of
door.
a Salesman rather than Breakfast
Yeah, I
Club.
do. But any of these curated lists, you take something that you think is interesting and you get to see 10 different facets of it.
There was also Marriage, the Cure for Love. Is that true?
Don't get me started on that.
I think that choice, though, of all the blocks, if you're just talking about quality of films, this is the one not to miss.
Absolutely. Take that crappy
Some
title
great
off of it
films.
and let's just enjoy the films.
The one I haven't seen on this is Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice.
It's so fun.
It is.
Is it?
Yes, very much.
Again, we already talked about Scenes of a Marriage. We already mentioned Cassavetes. I think Faces might be my favorite Cassavetes. Yeah, I think it is.
Cool.
I really like Faces and Leonardi, Antonioni. Yeah, definitely not the portrait of my marriage, and I'm not going to probe to ask if it's yours, but I have a feeling it's not. I think I have a good idea of your chemistry because I hear it every other week. And there was also Fernando de Leo's Milieu trilogy, which was brand new to me. I had not heard of it.
You're going to have
You?
Yeah, we
fun.
have that
Really?
Fernando de Leo box that came out on Raro Video. There's a company called Raro that does a lot of Italian procedurals, crime films, horror films, and there's a fantastic box set, or actually there are two of them, but the first one includes these films. Milano Caliber 9 is one of the best two-fisted, pulpy Italian crime films you will ever see.
You know what? I just looked it up. I own it because it came out from Arrow, so I think it's near the top of my disc watch. Milano Calabro 9. Awesome. Okay. Well, I will check it out. Oh, and we also when we were talking about Salesman, the French film was a 1979 French neo-noir. So I always it sounds like it's in the style of Melville. So that's
great.
Sounds great. Well, we also have the Criterion Channel, and we'll skip over No Country for Old Men. I should also mention that that was part of an earlier Adventures in Movie Going, which is weird that they're doing that. It was one of the first ones, I believe. There was also a digital spine of An Anatomy of a Murder, one of my favorite procedurals, court procedurals. Any thoughts? Start with you, Erica. Have you seen Anatomy of Murder, Preminger?
I have, and I'm a fan of it. Maybe quite not as much as you, though it has many things that I love in it.
What about you, Mr. Cole?
I'm a big fan of it. If for no other reason, we get early Ben Gazzara, we get Jimmy That's Stewart true. Cutting loose at the piano. For the
it's a
as tense as it is, and as dark a subject matter as it is, it has a lot of fun in the margins too.
And it's one of my two favorite Lee remixes, mm-hmm. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little long, but I think it does fly by, and I remember it pretty fondly. It's on Crate. I think it's about 3 hours, is it?
Is that right? No, it's not just quite. About two.
Yeah, a little over two.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, maybe it didn't fly by. Well, speaking of movies that do fly by, To Be or Not to Be, Digital Spine 670, that's one of my favorite Lubitsches, although that's a very crowded collection. I think I could name a different favorite Lubitsch any day of the week, but I have a feeling you're probably on the same page here.
100%. And it's got Cole's favorite, Carol Lombard.
She is one of my favorites, absolutely.
She's the best. I love Carol Lombard. And I love Lubitsch. I love this cover too. And I know it's not just because we talked to Caitlin Kuhwald about it, but it's really striking. I just think it really kind of encapsulates the lightness and the darkness of the movie. Although, more the darkness. I won't be rewatching it on this. I think I need to dig into the Criterion, but it's a great inclusion. If you haven't seen it and you like dark screwball comedies about World War II, go for it. We also had a Campion double feature, short plus feature, an Exercise in Discipline, Peel, that's P-E-E-L, and then, of course, Sweetie, which feels like we're talking about Sweetie mentioning Sweetie every other month. But any thoughts on Campion, Erica?
I think for me, she probably falls more in the I don't quite understand. She, I think, infuriates me, but I will continue to watch and think and explore and debate.
I think Sweetie is a very infuriating movie, and I think even its champions would agree that it's funny that Nymphomaniac was a hit for you, but Campion is questionable. But what do you think, Cole?
I'm sort of in the same boat, actually, and I don't know if it is something that I have come to feel that way lately or if I've always had those struggles with her. I like Sweetie a great deal, though, actually. I think I probably like it more than you.
I haven't seen it, so it's one that I'm really looking forward to.
Okay.
You'll find it thorny, for sure. But
very much so.
Again, you know, what I like, that's what I prefer, so.
Yeah, we were talking, I think she was on the main channel a couple weeks ago, so we were talking about her, and I looked at her filmography, and I found that I didn't like it as much as I should, but I really like her, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That does definitely make sense. You can definitely be drawn to a personality, and then that artwork doesn't turn out to be quite up to your taste, I think.
But I'm glad she occupies an office in Hollywood and makes big decisions, not just because she's a female, but because I don't know. I can't put, it's again, the je ne sais quoi. So, okay, well, on that note, we had a Friday double feature. Actually, speaking of Caitlin, she did The Organizer, and I'm All Right, Jack, which I had not seen. Actually, I still haven't seen The Organizer, but I'm All Right, Jack is Peter Sellers' vehicle from 1959, so very early in his career. So, Cole, have you seen either of these?
I have not seen The Organizer, unfortunately. We have it. It's here on the shelf, but I have not cracked it open. I'm All Right, Jack, I love. I love
really?
A frantic Peter Sellers. I love, to me, it seems like that is Peter Sellers not so restrained, not being so self-conscious, it seems to me. And I like it when he kind of undoes that top button a little bit, is what it feels like.
I'm a big Ian Carmichael fan, so I'm looking forward to it.
Cool, yeah. So would you say this is a comedic Sellers performance?
It feels like it to me. I don't know that it feels like that to everyone necessarily.
I mean, there's not many that aren't, you know, true. Even the ones that are, like Being There, I'd say is not comedic and comedic at the same time, but I'm sure this is quite, that's a good 30 years apart. I will have to check it out. And then The Organizer I haven't seen. Have you seen it, Erica?
No, I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, it's also on my shelf, and I don't know why I haven't motivated myself to see it, but I think it was one of those bare bones discs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yay. So let's do our fun piece of flair. So Cole, do you have a piece of flair or something about that's not Criterion related?
I do indeed. There was an announcement this week that was yelling right down my alley. Mondo Macabro, who are my favorite purveyors of a certain brand of international cinematic oddities, has announced a new offshoot label called American Arcana, and it's dedicated to twisted genre discoveries of specifically American regional cinema rather than the world cinema that they usually focus on. They're doing this in conjunction with Something Weird in the American Genre Film Archive, and their inaugural double feature is The Bushwhacker and The Ravager, each one with exclamation points. They do specifically note that The Bushwhacker is rife with unwhacked bushes, so look out. It's one of those things that if you're
thanks for the warning.
Yeah, if you're sad that you missed the days of drive-in exploitation fair or the 42nd Street raincoat crowd, this is the new label for you. So
I'm actually just pulling them up as you're talking, and it looks like they're doing Ishii the Killer, which is a pretty big title, I think,
for Mondo,
for
a
niche
is.
Label. That's interesting. I'm into home media, but Cole, you seem to you're on another level, I think. So Erica, do you have a piece of flair?
I do. I've got the better film than The Breakfast Club that came out of 1985, and that is Silver Bullet is finally getting a Blu-ray edition. So that would be my personal favorite / classic, finally coming out in a form that I can watch and enjoy and get a copy from my mom. It's got a bunch of cool extras in the edition. It's got really, really neat cover art. They've got an interview with Everett McGill, with the director, a look at the effects. So I can't wait.
So this was a Stephen King, and I saw it back in the day. This is one that did not age with me, like a Breakfast Club. I have not seen it 20 times.
This is a Halloween staple around here. We watch this one every year.
Really?
Yeah.
This is one that I quote. My mom and I quote this to each other.
Actually quite a cast. Gary Busey, Terry O'Quinn from Lost. It'd be interesting to see him at a young age. I have to revisit this. My memory is not too fond of this, and you know, even seeing it as a kid, this was probably more in my wheelhouse, a light Stephen King werewolf movie. But yeah, I have to check it out. What label again was that?
It's coming out on? It is some under the radar. It is, I would say. Maybe don't go out of your way. That's just me.
Come on.
It's a camp classic for sure.
That's fair.
It's got a Corey in it.
You guys don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, I'm not saying anything. I barely remember it, actually. But I do remember seeing it. Silver Bullet. It is coming from... Is this Scream Factory?
No. I wish it was Scream Factory.
It's I don't know who it is
exactly.
Anyway,
it's coming on Blu-ray. That's all that matters.
It's it has a blue strip at the top of the disc. So, all right, well, I'll check it out. Well, my is actually from another obscure Blu-ray label, although becoming less obscure. It is the Cohen Media Group's My Journey Through French Cinema from Bernard Tavernier. And of course, anybody that listens to this or has listened to my podcasting knows that I'm a sucker for French cinema. In fact, we talked about Godard today, but I really like early French cinema. And so I watched this. It's a long one. It's about 3 hours or so, and it's very personal. Have you seen it yet, either of you?
We had tickets for it last weekend, and then I got called into work, and so we couldn't go. I was so disappointed.
The good news is, though, at least just for us, it is on Amazon Prime. Or I'm sorry, not on Amazon Prime. We can rent it for a good price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that might be if rather than a blind buy, because I don't see you watching this more than once, even though I love it. I won't watch it more than once. And it's very personal. It's Tavernier talking about his own experiences and it really his exposure, what he saw as a kid, but then kind of doing the sort of Criterion-ish visual essays on these directors. And the thing is, it's 3 hours, which seems like a lot, but, you know, in terms of the history of French cinema and the amount of detail he goes in, it's not. So he barely cracks the surface. And actually, there are some directors that I just wasn't familiar with that I'm glad he put on my radar. And, of course, he does go through the big ones, you know, Truffaut, Godard, Renoir, of course, so that spends a lot of time with Renoir. And some of the we've talked about, like Duvivier, spends a lot of time talking about Jean Gabin. So it's great movie. But he's actually apparently going to work on a sequel that has other directors. So I think this will be up your alley. I noticed that the reviews were mixed, and I think this is one of those kind of like what's his name that did the.
The Story of Film, that one?
Story of Film, thank you. I can't believe I forgot that. Kind of like that, you know, if you're not into art film, that might not grab you, but if you are, there's a better chance of it doing so. So I think that's the same. Do you like The Story of Film?
I did. I think I was probably one of the few that actually enjoyed his voice eventually. I know a lot of complaints were lodged in terms of his cadence and the tone of his voice in general. The narrator, but I actually came to like it quite a bit.
Very gentle voice. So Tavernier is not a very different voice, and it's very more expressive. But yeah, you can't compare. But if you like French cinema, I think you'll like this movie. If you don't, then you probably won't. You'll probably not be interested. So it's curious that some people will watch it and not be fans of French cinema. But anyway, it's Preaching to the Converted. So thanks for joining us. Happy 2018. Where can people find Magic Lantern Podcast?
You can find us at the website, magiclanternpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram under that name. We're on Twitter, @lantern_cast. You can reach out to us tons of different ways, and we hope you do.
Please do. And also, they have a Patreon, so if you like their work, please support it. You know, they give a little, even if it's a couple dollars, it means a lot, right?
It does. And it's actually helped us upgrade our equipment this year. So going into 2018, we will be able to make much better sounding shows for everyone. So we appreciate that support more than we can say.
And I think that's great that's a thing that exists, that you can just, even if it's just a little bit, your audience can improve your show. I'm glad people have supported you. And by the way, I do support you, and
yes,
I'm glad I do.
Thank you so much.
We so appreciate it.
No problem. Anywhere personally you can find you, or just the show?
That's pretty much it. I think our lives have all collapsed into one single big show entity. We don't have personalities separate of that anymore.
I leave my separate personality just to look at cute dog pictures and videos, so I'll keep that away.
Okay, so you're basically the hive mind is the Magic Lantern podcast.
Yes.
is your household. So I can relate. On that note, my Twitter is AWES505, and I have an Instagram, but the show stuff is more interesting. You can find us at Criterion Cast Master Feed for the podcast, which you're probably already listening to, and Criterion Cast their Twitter and Facebook. And please join us at the Criterion Now Facebook group. I saw you joined this week, Erica.
I
didn't know you weren't in it. I would have begged you to join because we have a lot of fun in there. So thanks for joining the episode, and it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron.